And a very good evening to everybody. Happy New Year to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Of course, yes, I'm here.
Where is here, Kyle?
Well, we happen to be in the lovely town of Windsor.
Oh, my God, horses. Oh, I'm sorry. When you're not expecting to see a horse and one suddenly appears in the distance, for some reason I get upset. But this horse is coming. Well, not really. They're heading sort of away from us. But four horses and four horsemen. Oh, my God, four horsemen of the apocalypse. Calm down. Emmanuel, calm down. Calm down. All right. Okay, so we are in England.
Yes, England.
All right, and we are currently actually by the statue of a huge horse. Oh, my goodness. Have you turned around and looked at this horse? We haven't actually turned around and looked at it yet.
Yeah, it's a green color. I'm assuming because it's made of like a metal like bronze or copper or something, and it's corroded because it's obviously outside.
All right, I thought it was some kind of a tribute to green people, but I guess you're right. Yeah, it's a massive man on an equally massive horse. Look at how his foot sort of extends outwards. Doesn't have any stirrups on the well, there's no saddle. Yeah, he's just sitting directly on the horse there. And oh my God, you can see the genitals of the horse. You see that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's anatomically correct. I'm going to say this is a male horse.
I'm going to say quite a bit that's a male horse. Also, you can see the veins in the stomach area. You see that?
Yeah, they really they went all out for the you know, it gives power, a sense of strength, right?
Who thinks to do that? Who thinks to make veins on the stomach of a statue horse?
Somebody who's familiar with the undercarriage of horses.
Well, let's walk up to it. It's on top of a grassy hill. We've already climbed up the hill. So we've caught our breath again. Look at this pipe with the spikes on it. What's that all about?
That's a lightning rod.
Oh, I thought it was to keep us from climbing.
Well, they don't want you to climb around the lightning rod, but yeah, that's the metal that would guide current into the ground.
Okay, so now we can walk around this path over here. I should also point out, maybe this is the most impressive part of the whole thing, is that we're at one end of what's known as the Long Walk.
And we've walked part of the Long Walk. Well, part in our idea of what the Long Walk is, because what we're going to do is take you with us as we walk back.
Yeah, you're a captive prisoner now. You're going to walk the Long Walk with us. Right now we're at one end of it, and we're about to see what's at the other end, because we haven't turned around since we walked all the way. And still walking around this massive statue of a horse. Oh my God, did we walk that far?
Yeah, look at that. The castle and the whole town is in the distance. And that is one heck of a walk.
That is one heck of a walk. Wow. okay, and we have to walk all the way back to the castle now, and hopefully before sunset.
Yeah, the sun is still out. It's afternoon time, so it's going down. The weather is pretty calm. There might be a little bit of wind, you notice, because it's, you know, it's wintertime and the like, but it's really great weather. Great weather for walking.
Well, right now we're walking on craggy rocks on top of a hill next to the statue. Whoa! And there's bricks here, and mud, and all sorts of things. It's really only safe to walk single file. And I'm trying to see if there's any kind of an inscription on this thing.
I think you'll see there is.
Is there?
Yeah, it's over here, E.
Oh, wow.
Giorgio Tirso Patria, I think that is Latin.
Hey, how about that? They speak Latin.
Optimo Georgius Rex. Sounds like a dinosaur.
Could you give us a year, maybe, Latin speakers? You know, it'd be helpful.
George the father is the optimist George dinosaur.
George the optimist?
I don't know.
I get credit for guessing George, because we were walking up. He said, I'll bet that guy's named Henry. And I said, I'll bet he's named George. Neither one of us knew. And, wow. So, George.
No, good on you. You got it right.
And we were wondering, too, if there was another Henry after Henry VIII. Did they just cancel the whole series at that point?
Yeah, my vote is that Henry was terrible, and they didn't want to keep that going.
Apologies in advance to our English listeners, because we're going to display our aggressive ignorance of both English history and American history. We're not proud of it. We're not boasting about it, but it is what it is. and we'll look up what this statue is all about. But it probably has something to do with the royal family, since the castle's on the other end of it.
That's right. We could probably look up where this horse and rider fit in to the grand scheme, but I'm not going to speculate any further and insult those who have made themselves aware of what actually transpired.
And by the way, I don't know which of the off-the-wall listeners is responsible for this, but somebody apparently leaked word of our presence here, because all these people are taking pictures now. And we're standing in front of the statue. There must be four or five different people taking pictures of us. We'd appreciate it if you do hack into our systems and get a hold of our plans, that you not leak it to the public, because, it's disruptive, and people are okay, they've moved on.
Yeah, this isn't a, like, walking zoo, okay?
No. I'm going to just look over here, see if there's anything else on this side, because we've looked at all the sides except for that side of the statue. Then we'll start our long walk.
I'll tell you what is a zoo, is the Windsor tourist area.
You want to get in? I think we should be walking on a straight path when we get into that, because that's definitely going to be an impassioned speech that we give as far as that goes. But everyone seems to be climbing up over here, including little toddlers. I guess it's just a rocky area. We're right in back of the horse's ass right now. Hold on. I'm going to get down the hill a little bit.
Yeah, I think we've seen pretty much every end of this thing.
And more.
Look
at these rocks, though. It's like they're fossilized.
Yeah, they're sort of smooth, and they look like volcanic or something like that. But
they have impact craters.
Yeah, it's mostly from corrosion and people and
tourists.
Tourists, yeah.
Okay, so we're on top of the hill now. We're going to go down the hill, and everything else is pretty much flat from that point. And it's just this long, long path. And I first learned about this path while watching the royal wedding earlier in 2018. I just saw this amazing, long path. Of course, people were gathered there to watch the wedding procession go by. But I was just really, really curious. And that's, again, my ignorance. I just assumed everything happened at Buckingham Palace. I didn't really know about Windsor Palace. The Queen is actually there now, I understand.
Yeah, it's one of her residences. I think there's four different places she's generally at, or a couple, not that many, but this is one of the places she goes to on the weekend, and today happens to be a Saturday.
And yeah, it's that's for security purposes. You never really know where the Queen is. Of course, there's the fake Queen, the one that looks like her, that's actually the dummy Queen. That she could be the one that's there now, and the other queen could be in Piccadilly. We don't know.
Yep. And there's approximately 150 people that live at this castle full-time. So it is a working, fully functioning castle, unlike many of the monuments you see. I have some other interesting facts. I was reading up on it a little bit. There's just so much, though. And that's one thing I think anybody can appreciate, is how much history the English monarchy has witnessed and participated in over the years and centuries.
Yeah, they've gotten their hands into a lot of things over the years, and it's amazing the reverence that they're still held in this country. It's kind of a stabilizing force because there's just this history you hold on to, and this feeling of a common bond of one sort or another, hypocritical or not. There's something comforting about it. It's very hard to explain until you see it actually in action. And, everything is royal mail, royal this, royal that. There's just we can't go down here. This is kind of steep.
Wait a minute. I find the same comfort in the post office.
Well, that's it. The royal post office, the royal mail. I don't know how she's involved with that. But
USPS. That's my constant.
Well, it's royalty of a sort. Hold on a second. We're going to talk about the post office in a bit, too, but first I have to get down this muddy, slippery hill. You might hear me fall on the air. Not the first time either. Oh, my God. I can't stop. I'm on the road now. Wow. Okay. We made it. Now we're on pavement.
I was speaking of pavement. I thought this was gravel. When we were watching, I was with you watching the wedding, and I thought, honestly, this was gravel, but it's not. It's pavement.
Stand for a moment and take in the majesty of the scene as the royal palace lies ahead of us, must be about 2 or 3 miles away, down a completely straight path, while this gigantic horse is behind us. It was a sign saying no cycles, ridden or otherwise. That means you can't walk your bike down this pass. So don't even think of it. On the other side, vehicles prohibited, no cycles, ridden or otherwise, no rollerblading. They're very, very direct about cycling. They don't like that. So,
I think it would be an obstruction to the people walking. And most of the photos and promotional stuff you see online about this have to do with this vast empty space. But on an ordinary day, especially a weekend like this, there's quite a few people walking and really taking in this amazing pathway and experiencing it themselves, making the walk. It's lined with trees and grass on either side. Normally, as I said, you see it without any people, but there's a whole lot of people making this walk with us.
Well, not so many. I mean, in the distance, I see maybe a dozen people as far as the eye can see, and behind us maybe a handful. But it's more people, as you said, than when the thing is being used for something royal.
Right, or pictured. You see it empty, and that makes it seem really, you know, majestic and unattainable. But it's like a park. It's like a really long, narrow park.
Yeah, imagine something as big as Central Park. That's pretty much what we're dealing with here, because there's fields as far as the eye can see to both the right and the left, and of course the long walk is incredibly long, and there's really nothing else around. There's some deer, there's some large birds, there's cabbage being grown in fields. It's amazingly spacious.
Yeah, we think it's cabbage, some kind of leafy green stuff, but on the other end, and in the distance, you see Windsor Castle itself, one of the largest palaces in the world, actually.
In case it's not clear, we've begun our walk. We're heading towards there.
And adjacent to that is sort of a small town and a mall, actually. And that was something I was referring to earlier. It's really crazy right now. Everybody's trying to get their last-minute shopping in.
Let's start with how we got to that damn town. We planned this out. We wanted to take the long walk, but we didn't realize we'd have the long park before the long walk. We researched where we could park the damn car so that we could get on this particular walk before the sun went down. We found a great parking lot. We found a great parking space. And then we realized that the parking machine only took coins. And while it took cards, it didn't take credit cards. It took special British cards that we don't know anything about.
It's called a privilege card. It's actually called a privilege card.
My God, I can't believe that, the privilege card.
They can't get over themselves.
So anyway, we don't have a privilege card. So what they do have, though, is they have a number you can call to pay, apparently, over the phone. And fine, that works. I'm not exactly sure how that they're going to do that. Probably enter your license plate or something like that. So I call this number. Great personal expense to call a number for my phone in England. And I had this nice little prompt, asked for my credit card, and I had my phone on speaker, so it blurted out my credit card number to everybody listening. That's nice. Thank you very much. Expiration date, special code on the back. Then it wanted the license plate. And then it said I did something wrong. It didn't tell me what I did wrong. It just said we had an error. And
you couldn't get your card details, which we were pretty explicit about. The last thing we said was the color, and then it just says, didn't get your card details.
Oh, the color of the car, not the card. The card details or the card details?
Car details.
Oh, I thought you said card details.
No, that I think was the second time. Well, it wasn't the second time. The second time it just was like a, well, you explain it.
Well, they wanted you to speak the car type. And our car is a Vauxhall. So I don't even know how to say that. Did I say it right?
I'm pretty sure you said it right. And all it is a recording, so that gives me the idea that you're going to have a person listening to that while they're standing in front of your car deciding whether to give you a ticket or not. In this case, they could hear you say Vauxhall clearly, and I don't see what the problem was.
I think it's gonna match me saying Vauxhall to a particular type of car. I must have said it wrong. By the way, it's spelled V-A-U-X.
H-A-U-L?
H-A, yeah. We don't have these cars. I don't know how to pronounce it, so maybe I pronounced it wrong. I don't know. Anyway, it said we're having a problem. Call back later. After giving it all my information, it just hung up on me. So I had to call back, and then as soon as I called back, it recognized my number and said, I think I said my card was expired, but which it wasn't. My card expires. Well, I'm not going to tell you when it expires, but even though I told the whole car park when it expired, It doesn't expire for a while, so that's wrong. Then I entered all the information again, and then it said the system is unavailable after taking all my information.
And, mind you, there are four other lots and ample parking around. They all use the same system.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So here we are, finally make it to Windsor, and we can't figure out how to park. So we drove all around town. Well, you drove all around town, because I just couldn't deal with that.
This is why we like public transit, just putting that out there. Steady, nice reminder for people.
Except there really isn't much that we could figure out to get here from where we were. But anyway, we drove around a bit more, and we found a mall, and found a parking garage in that mall, and that was a whole other ordeal.
Yeah, it took us 20 minutes to get to the top floor, I think it was 5 or 6, and wait and wait and wait, and then we finally found a spot that's right around a corner that we were able to back into, and then we couldn't get out of each side. Well, I think you could barely get out. I couldn't get out at all on the driver's side.
How is that a spot? How is that a spot when you can barely fit the car in, and you have to mountaineer yourself out of the car? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, the worst case, we would have had to, like, open a window. I don't know how we would have closed the window, climbing out a window, climbing over a railing or something. Really not that accessible. And then we're trying to get out of the parking garage, which itself is like a nightmare. There's all these exit signs, fire exit signs, which, believe me, are not fire exits.
That's very true. It's something I have to say is done very poorly in this country, is emergency evacuation signs, because we were there in that parking garage trying to figure out how to get out of it, and we couldn't. All we kept doing was winding up the different sections of it, but we wanted to get out onto the street, and we couldn't do that. It took us, we were riding elevators after a while, and just winding up in places where we were just more enclosed spaces.
So that ejected us into sort of a walking indoor-outdoor mall, again with no street access that we could see. We had to go up into a historic train station, I think the Windsor stop, to then walk through another section and a visitor center, and there we were at the castle, which is not where we wanted to be. We wanted to be near the long walk, at which point we realized there's still no reception, because reception's been very spotty, probably just from so many people or so many buildings. We're enclosed in all these rebar concrete structures, and we're trying to find out how do we find the entrance to the walk. And I think ultimately you threw your phone at somebody or down a drain or something.
I felt like it, though. I didn't actually do it, but I felt like it. And you left out the whole part about getting coffee, because, we just wanted to get coffee so we could, we got up and basically started doing this without having anything. So we found Acosta's Coffee, which is a chain out here. And, my God, it was so jam-packed with people. We could barely fit in that place. And, I had to... People are very aggressive when a table opens up. I got to say, age means absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter if you have a walker. People are very, and God bless them. Good for them that they got to the table first. But I was ahead in line, lady. I should have had that table. I'm going to let that go. We had our coffee, very cramped conditions. I think, not to be too critical of England, but it's a claustrophobic country.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. There's just... Right? A lot of tiny roads, tiny pathways. It's jarring enough that you're driving on the opposite side, but just walkways and alleyways and somehow in New York there's, restaurants and very small spaces, but it works. People give way, they yield, they do these kinds of things because they know it's cramped.
Well, how about this? When we drive on a road, there's space for a car, and there's space for another car to be going in the other direction. It's not the case here, not necessarily. You're driving down a road, and there's only room for one car, and yet two cars are coming at the same time. And you have to figure out who's going to yield, who's going to pull over, and who's going to get to go forward.
Yeah.
And it's, when you're just starting out driving, it can be extremely scary because you don't exactly know. I was the first one to drive the rental car when we picked that up. And... Right away, I was faced with that situation where I'm on this narrow road and a car's coming towards me. I didn't know what to do. Fortunately, it worked out. In fact, it's worked out virtually every time. We haven't smacked into anything, although we've come close a couple of times. And we have to return the car tomorrow, so fingers crossed that we'll make it. It's like that almost everywhere. You're walking down a corridor, and of course, where you want to go, that's where someone else has to be. You stand in front of a doorway, that's the doorway it's going to open. It seems like maybe that's how England has stayed England all this time, because They haven't built onto open spaces. There's so many open spaces, but the spaces that are developed are very, very cramped.
Yeah, and there's a, add to that the factors of obliviousness and, you know, technology. You get people on their phones and stuff. It makes it even more difficult and more treacherous coming around a corner. You never know who's going to pop in front of you with a baby carriage or whatever.
Oh, my God, the baby carriages. It's like, you know, a baby carriage is not a license to just cut anybody off at any time, but that's what happens. You're walking down the street, all of a sudden, you're tripping over a baby carriage that's come out of nowhere, or people, they just, you know, they walk out of a store without looking to the left or right, plowed right into you. You know, it's a whole different manner of walking than what I'm used to in New York.
So true, so true. And just to give a sense, there's these roundabouts, and that's another thing. But what we've noticed in the South, yeah, no, it's near the city, away from the city, you're always going to find these roundabouts. But would you ever expect there to be three roundabouts in a row?
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. You know, we call them traffic circles back home. And, you know, we have a few of them. There are actually a couple on Stony Brook campus. It's, you know, and they're good. They work. But I think they kind of overdo it here. There's a traffic circle, and then right next to it is another one. And if you're using GPS, you know, the instructions that you get are take the second exit on the roundabout, then take the third exit on the next roundabout. And you have to do this very, very quickly. Now, it's a lot of power and very few traffic lights. But if you're new and you're going the wrong way and it's a three-lane roundabout, boy, you got to think fast.
And you got to be careful what you count as an exit or an entrance. Could be just a driveway. That counts. So then you miss your exit and you're going the wrong direction all of a sudden into the next three roundabouts. You got to figure out how many roundabouts you're off from the roundabout you actually wanted to go to. I'm just saying roundabout now. It's just insane.
By the way, we should point out the Queen is under the flight path of Heathrow. Or at least part of her property is, and that's why all the planes that you're hearing over us. And we've walked a good distance. Let's turn around and see how the horse is. Oh, look how far away the horse is. It feels like we're halfway there, but we're not. We've got a long way to go. The castle is looming ahead, which tells you how big that castle is. Wow. We probably won't be able to get inside it, but who knows. We should talk, though, about where we were last time, at the end of the last episode. Because we were finishing up on the QM2, the Queen Mary 2, the ocean liner that took us from Brooklyn to Southampton in England. And what an amazing trip that was. Very, very different from what we've been going through now. Gone from 5-star to sometimes less than 1-star accommodations and experiences. But we basically, I guess you could describe it as a hard landing in Southampton.
Yeah, let's not mince words. That was not a transition. That was an abrupt change from the lap of luxury to the waiting room for ground transport at Southampton. All the people there, they're nice people, I'm sure, but they're not really there to help guide you. You need to have coordinated whatever transportation you plan to use after having left the ship. So, we walked around a little bit. There was alleged to have been a free bus. We could not find it. And that bus was going to take us sort of into the town proper where other transportation could be more useful to us. But you're essentially at the end of a pier. So you're kind of removed from really the town proper. And what that meant is that we had to kind of stand around and figure out how far we might have to walk or, you know, if there was anything relatively close or how much a cab would cost or how much, you know, cash or change we'd need to do any of that.
Can I also point out that it was raining. raining and windy. No, we got off the boat. Everything is great on the boat. You get on the boat, you arrive. And from the moment you arrive to the moment you leave, you feel like $1 million. They treat you like royalty. And as soon as you get off the boat and you're out of their hands, wow, reality sets in.
And we had a cardboard box with all of our our formal wear, which was required on the ship. So that box was going to get wet. So it was all kind of an interesting game. But we basically had to really strike out on foot and get our way towards Southampton proper, which we did. We did. We found some covered areas, made some stops along the way, and ended up in a cafe.
Yeah, well, all we did was when we got off the boat, we just basically spent like literally an hour wandering around, seeing if there was any possibility of getting to town, using a bus, using, God forbid, a train. But everything, there were lots of buses or lots of taxis. I didn't really want to take a taxi. We didn't have cash. There was no place to get cash. We should have done that on the boat. We didn't. And, you know, the town wasn't that far away, but it was raining, it was windy. We had all this luggage on us, including the cardboard box Kyle mentioned, which, by the way, the reason it was in the cardboard box was because our plan was to ship it back to the States because we don't need a tuxedo anymore. Nothing we're going to at this stage requires a tuxedo. So it was fun on the boat. Now we don't need it anymore, so let's get rid of it. And we didn't know how much of a challenge it was going to be to actually have that sent back overseas. But anyway, we eventually figured out where we were and took... a nice brisk walk in several stages, invariably, oh my God, and this is what I was talking about before with England, we were just trying to get to one place and there'd be people in front of us that would be walking slow and we couldn't get around them. And as soon as they finally ducked away, another few people would get in front of us and do the same thing. We just couldn't get past that. So we got very wet and we took much longer than we wanted to get to anywhere where we could get shelter, but we finally found a coffee shop and were able to duck in there, connect to the internet, dry ourselves off, and just rest.
Yeah, dry and warm up a bit, and that then eventually got us to our accommodations.
We kept going. We found the place to stay, and then, you know, when as soon as you're able to situate yourself and relax a little bit, then you can explore, then you can think about other things to do. And we just basically wound up walking around and trying to find a place to eat. We went to a Thai place. Remember that Thai place? That was pretty good, actually.
It was really interesting. Really had a great talk with some locals that were out, and they were giving us all kinds of tips and ideas about Southampton and some of our plans there.
It's not like a Thai place you'd see in the States. It's basically, there were a couple of Thai people in there, but it was also a bunch of English people that had no Thai roots whatsoever. And it was kind of cool because we instantly started talking to a bunch of them about various things, including our plans to go to a football game the next day. We wanted to see Southampton playing Arsenal. They were playing locally. Never been to a football game before. In the UK for sure, and it's just, you know, we're in Southampton. Everybody there, of course, is a Southampton fan, and it was just a really good thing to be able to trade ideas and opinions on.
Yeah, of course, and such a normal experience for so many people there, but for us, so new and really intriguing how it all worked, especially for a team like Southampton, that's, you know, I guess mid-size. It's smaller than like a real, you know, huge club, but it's a club nonetheless.
Well, they're in the Premier League, and you'd probably be beaten in the alley pretty severely for saying that. But they have had their troubles. They have, you know, been relegated. And in fact, they were in relegation zone when we got there. They only had won one game in the season. And Arsenal, I think they had a 22-game unbeaten streak going into this, and they're, like, right at the top of the Premier League. What happens at the end of the season, the bottom three teams in, I think it's 24 teams, they wind up going down to the next league, which is called the Championship. And same thing, they go down. The next league after that is League One and then League Two, which is kind of silly because League One is really the third division, but whatever. The thing is, it was a pivotal game for Southampton because if they were to lose again, I don't know, their fate might have been sealed. It just would have been a bad thing. We kind of felt we might be the good luck charms.
Well, yeah, we're just different enough. We're the unusual factor that kind of nudged. What am I saying? I don't know. We just went to a game. I hope we were, but I'm not gonna take so much credit. It was really fun though.
But it was also a challenge to even get tickets to the game because what I did was I tried to buy tickets at home, and it's not that easy. You have to kind of be a member of the club to buy tickets in the first place. So I went through StubHub and found tickets available. But then after buying the tickets, they said you need a local address to have them shipped to. And then we were on a boat with no internet access for a week. And as soon as we arrived, I found out that the person selling the tickets hadn't sent them. So StubHub was really good working with us to find a substitute. They emailed us a PDF. We got the place we were staying at to print it, and we got into the game.
And the seats were fantastic. I don't think there's a bad seat in the place. And it's so different when you're in the stands. When you watch on television, you have so many aids and graphics telling you what the scores or the time and all of that. It's a lot less like that. You're really keeping track of the game with everyone else. There's chants and cheers and songs, and you get to participate, and it's this camaraderie that I found so fascinating. We also were able to see where the opposing teams were sitting, and they would have their own chants and retort.
The opposing team's fans.
Yeah, the other team's spectators had a section, and their fans would have a song or a chant that would counter anything that the rest of the stadium was singing or saying.
Yeah, that's the thing. Every team has a song, and they almost, I think every player has a song that's kind of attached to them as well, and they all just kind of develop over time, and are modified for the situation. For instance, "Shame on Arsenal, always cheating," done to the tune of, what is that tune that clocks play?
I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, "Shame on Arsenal, always cheating." A grandfather clock would chime on the half hour, I think.
"Ding, dang, dong." I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
It's probably not French. I don't know. Everything kind of went to a tune of some sort. And as you said, yeah, they have specific ones for players who are entering or exiting the field or making a goal. And it just went on and on and on. It was really this incredible experience and ambiance that you can only experience when you're a part of it. And the clappers were there to help you make noise and clap. It was basically like a souvenir poster that's folded up in an accordion, and you just bang that on everything. You hear people behind you screaming and shouting their own things, you know. I think there was a kid standing on a seat behind us screaming "pressure." He's just saying "pressure" the whole time. And it was great, you know. He had his thing, and
he was six.
That's right. And somehow I think they learn new words at these games.
Now we're at a gate here, at the first mile point or whatever. And we go through a little fence. And then, I guess this is where we're on the property, technically. Walking around the gate, there's a vehicle there, the Windsor Great Park Constable or whatever. And as you can hear, we're going through the gate.
He's the warden.
Okay, good. Close the gate behind you. Yeah, there's a little house here, which I guess is where they watch for trouble. But there's still massive fields around us, quite a long ways to go. But the horse looks really tiny in back of us. But, of course, compared to the castle, the horse is tiny.
But as I said, there's a lot of special language used, and I think there's some suspending of kid-friendly words, because there's a lot of cursing. There's a lot of, impassioned commentary, and that's, a place where you can express yourself and not hold back. And I think it's all part of the experience.
I was a little concerned. I didn't know what it would be like. I didn't want to get caught up in the soccer mob. It's different. It's not like in the States where, you can pretty much go to a game and not have to show your allegiance. It wasn't really the case there. Nobody was expecting us to, cheer for Southampton, but I think they would have taken offense if we cheered for the other team. But, in the States, I'd recently been to a Jets game. More people were cheering for Buffalo than for the Jets, but that's just the Jets. It was a great game. Southampton scored first. Nobody expected, well, I guess, the diehard fans expected that, but I didn't expect that. And it was amazing. That's, wow, we're ahead. We're ahead of Arsenal. And it was we felt like a we. And it was just such a high to be riding on.
And Arsenal kept falling and, staying on the ground and taking their time, running the clock out.
Yeah, so they scored the first goal, and shortly before the second half, or before the first half ended, Arsenal tied it. And, I was saying to myself, at least they're still tied. They can get a point out of this game. They won't lose. And if they're tied at the half, they're playing pretty well. They're holding Arsenal, you know, from scoring a blowout. That's not a bad thing. It's literally not a loss. Second half began, and guess what? Southampton scored again. They had 2-1. It was really amazing. Everybody was happy again. And then, of course, Arsenal tied. So it was 2-2. And then, close to the end of the game, I think with less than 5 minutes left before stoppage time, Southampton went ahead one more time, 3-2. And then it was just a question of, can they hold Arsenal? And it was a real nail-biter. What we discovered was, when the stoppage time, in other words, the time that's left after regular time is finished, they show you on TV how much stoppage time there is, and they're counting. Now, you can see the guy on the field holding up the sign. In this case, the sign said 5, meaning 5 minutes, but you don't know when the 5 minutes are up because there's no clock counting it, so you have to sort of estimate it, and that's what everybody in the stadium was doing, estimating when the 5 minutes might be up, and it was the longest 5 minutes of our lives, but we got through them, and Southampton scored an amazing upset victory against Arsenal, propelled themselves out of the relegation zone. Arsenal lost their first game in 23 matches, and it was all because of us.
Yes. These are A380s.
A380s?
They're the largest planes.
That's a lot. Why does it not look large?
Well, the other one I think was the A380. That might be a 777. I don't know.
Can you tell what airline it is?
British Airways.
How can you tell that from looking at the bottom of a plane?
Well, because everything we've looked at has been British Airways.
Oh. Well, I guess that's one way. We are in Britain, after all.
I think Heathrow is a hub.
What are these things hanging from trees? Do you see that?
Some kind of feeder, but I think there's only one. I don't know why that tree.
Wow. Okay, well, where would you say we are in relation to everything?
We are, I don't know, halfway, maybe?
You think we're halfway? That castle does look kind of close. Where did we start? There's a road up ahead we have to cross. I remember we walked a ways before we got to that road.
That's right. It's deceiving. I think once we cross that road, it'll be we're halfway through one of the thirds, the middle third. So we have till that road and then another third of it.
You know, you're talking like an Englishman. Halfway through the middle third, I think is what you said.
Yeah, it's a farthing and then a penny farthing after the forlong.
Okay, now you're speaking like a Welshman, so let's keep moving. Let's look at where we are. We are on the long walk, halfway between the horse and the castle. I guess that's really the most uncultured way you can possibly say that.
There's a novel.
And we're recounting our trip through England, as we recovered from the luxury of the Queen Mary 2 and got used to our usual station in life, which is overcrowding, being frantic, and trying to find the best possible deal.
That's right. And, well, as I said, it wasn't a subtle transition. It was abrupt and, of course, I think comforting, because it puts you back into your street smarts and, you know, getting your plans in order, and so far as the next phase of your travels, you think ahead, you anticipate what you'll have to do to get transport and all that. At this point, we hadn't yet had a car.
Yeah, I was trying to think, when did we get the car? We're in Southampton now, we just went to the game. Oh, we got the car the next day, didn't we?
Yes, that's right. And that basically was, after we checked out, we walked to the bus station, which was pretty close, pretty nearby, and then
so it was a train station. We just learned that.
Right, right, and had some coffee, and got ourselves going to sort out what bus, which I think you had researched, and it was pretty simple once we found it.
Well, they have a good bus system there, and we just figured out how many stops and how we could pay, and we even learned about the bus. There are buses there that leave the air behind them cleaner than the air in front of them. Is that right?
Yeah, there's several private lines, and one of them has a pilot program for several buses, I think on the 7 line.
Number 7, yes.
Yeah, bus 7, yeah.
The blue bus.
It's basically like a fin, or like an airfoil or a spoiler or some kind of aerodynamic thing on the roof of the bus that basically captures air and filters and scrubs it and leaves
scrubbed pure air in its wake.
Yeah, look this up. Southampton, England, the number 7 bus. What do they call it? The air purifier?
I think it was a blue line or something.
It was definitely blue, but the actual device on top of the bus.
I don't know the name of that. They probably have a trade name or a brand associated with it. But it's kind of cool. It's a good concept that, you know, you'd be deploying these buses on all the streets, the very places where pollution is occurring, and instead of outputting more pollutant, you would be compensating and, in fact, scrubbing and cleaning more of the air than you're actually outputting. In some cases, these buses are hybrid electric or some sort of ultra-efficient propulsion technology. But by adding this this feature, you're doing some good while you're transporting people around the town in these urban areas that tend to have a lot of ground level pollution.
Well, we didn't ride number 7 bus. We rode the number 2 bus, which runs on coal, and caused a great big stench behind. No, we didn't do that. But we didn't ride that bus. We took the right one to get to the car rental place, which dropped us off right in front of it, which was kind of cool.
Basically, we rode along the port and found this rental place, got into what we thought would be a really compact car. It ends up being kind of like a mid-compact or, like, not subcompact, compact SUV, I guess you might say.
Yeah, and that's what got me right away, is that this car is too damn big and these roads are too damn small. And here I am driving on the wrong side and being expected to figure out how to pass people and how to let them through. And what's the very first thing we did? We went to an IKEA to get some presents for people, and I had to park in one of those car parks. Very, very narrow, winding entryway that goes up a couple of levels. It was just so incredibly stressful and frightening at the same time. Basically, you know, you get into a car for the first time in a foreign country, driving on the wrong side of the road, and you're tested in every imaginable way possible within the first 5 minutes. So, yeah, it was a little bit stressful, and for you as well, I know.
Well, and you'd think you'd find respite in maybe getting away from the town, right? But no. We went right into town, and then we went into the most crowded, compact, frenetic place you can possibly think of, which is a multi-level car park attached to a mall. And that was like no joy for us, but we were able to relieve ourselves of the car, which actually was nice because we knew our stuff was safe for the most part.
We just got the car, so right away we wanted to relieve ourselves of it.
Well, we're not used to that. It's not our norm, you know, unless we're driving around an entire country or exploring different parts of a region, you know, in sort of unconventional ways and ways that don't have a lot of service. It's not our norm. So for us, being nimble, being kind of free of a huge contraption like that and our bags, it's just nice. It was the first chance for us to just kind of walk around during a daytime between hotels and accommodations with nothing really to bug us as far as being burdened.
Yeah, well, you know, I was happy to be relieved of it as well. But, of course, what's the first thing we did? We walked into an IKEA, found what we wanted right in the front, but no, it's not that easy. You had to walk all the way through the damn store to get to the checkout counter. And we wound up doing that and finally getting out of the place. Then we went back to our big cardboard box filled with tuxedos that we wanted to ship back because we had some intelligence that there might be a DHL in the area that would take the bag from us. In fact, there might have even been a deal with QM2 passengers. I'll cut to the end of that. There was no deal, and there was no DHL either. We walked around afterwards with our cardboard box looking for the DHL. We eventually wound up in the equivalent of, I think, an office supply store that accepts packages from them, who had no idea how to ship the package that we had. So here we are in Southampton with a car and a big cardboard box that we have to send back to the States, and we have no clue how to do it. That was the predicament we found ourselves in only 2 days after arriving.
Yes, we were told that we'd have to repack to go in a certain box, and we realized this is just a pickup point. This person is not going to help us in any way, and this was basically an opportunity to cut our losses and move on, get out of there, and continue on with our trip.
And we were basically deciding, we had decided where to go next. Based somewhat on what Helen from the last program advised us to do, we headed towards Brighton. We'd never been to Brighton before, and that was a place we wanted to check out. We had a car. We could do that, so that was our next destination. Now, where we are right now currently, we have reached, as you might be able to tell, the road that bisects the long walk that goes from the statue to Windsor Castle. Maybe this is the halfway point. I'm not exactly sure. But I can tell you this is the stopping point for us on this particular show because we've talked ourselves through an entire hour. We're going to have to do this again next week and pick up across the street from this particular part of the path. We have so much to tell as far as what we've been through over here in the UK, and there's probably a lot more that's happened since.
Yes, we'll have more info and exciting stories from Brighton and beyond.
Those tourists have never seen a microphone before, the way they're gawking at us. Yes, we're from Top of the Pops or whatever, and let's just watch them cross the street like they've never done that before either. Wow, that was close.
Jacket, but I'm walking.